Welcome to Between Axles, your not-so-serious car podcast. My name is Peter, I'm your host, and this is episode 8. Today we have our co-host from Melbourne, Jono. How are you, Jono?
Hey, Peter. Yeah, not bad.
How are things in Melbourne?
Yeah, it's not too bad here. We're just recovering out of lockdown, so yeah.
Good to be back on the road, right?
Pretty much, yeah.
Today's topic is going to be something, not myself, but I think Jono is quite familiar with. And it's going to be our own experiences with the police and the road police. And hopefully we can give some good insights on how to handle different situations and also keeping yourself safe and your car safe on the road. So, Jono, could you start us off? What's some great experiences that you had in the past when you started to drive, or maybe soon after?
I don't know if they were great experiences, but I guess not my proudest moments, but I have had a couple of speeding tickets. We used to go to meets where basically, you know, we'd all get together and people would do stupid stuff, and then the police would arrive and we would just go to the next spot, and then, you know, half an hour later, the police would get to that spot, and then we'd move on from there.
Is there any particular experience? Maybe a particular meet? Must be a Honda meet, right?
No, actually, the Honda meets were pretty civilized. It was always, okay. Usually it would just be, it'd be pretty spontaneous, but, you know, like on a Friday night, you'd have all the cars, a whole bunch of cars gather at, say, Green Lane McDonald's or something. And then from there, you know, we'd go somewhere else, and it would all be, I guess part of it would be pretty organized. You know, they'd use some channels to communicate, you know, with each other and just tell us where the next spot was. And, of course, you know, the police would come, but, you know, as soon as the police would come, we'd go, and they could never sort of just follow us, because if you had someone following you, you wouldn't lead them to the next spot, right? So we'd always have some time in between, and it was kind of just like a cat and mouse game. It was dumb, but yeah, that's sort of what my experience was. I do remember one time when we all gathered to one spot, like in a parking lot, and then the police basically waited for all the cars to get into the parking lot, and then they just ambushed us from all the different entrances. So they blocked off all the exits and the entrances, so we couldn't get out, and then they just slowly let us out one by one, and, you know, checked all our cars and everything. And it was dumb, but, you know, that's sort of what it was back then.
Great. I'd like to say I have any experiences, but I actually don't have anything to do. I've never been caught.
That's good. That's a good thing, Peter.
I've been sensible. But speaking of the police, we actually have a great guest today, and we're joined by Sergeant Vinny. And he's from the county's Manukau Road Policing Team. How are you today?
Hey, guys. Thanks. I'm good. And thanks for having me along tonight to talk to you all.
Absolutely. We're so glad to have you on board to speak as our guest. So could you please give us a background on your policing experience and maybe a bit of experience on the road policing side?
Sure. So as per any police officer that comes in New Zealand, we all go through our initial couple of years where we go frontline and get a range of skills and see all the sites and do all the different types of jobs we do. I went into a unit that was called the Road Crime Unit. That was a buzz for me because I am a car enthusiast. I like cars. I like seeing nice cars and I like seeing them done well. So it was something I'd always picked up the Fast Fours and Rotary's magazine and Performance Car magazine and stuff. Had a range of different cars through the years. But when it came to this one, that really grabbed me. So I did 2 years with the Road Crime Unit, which was primarily focusing on the, we have a couple of different names for it, ISR, which is the illegal street racer scene. That obviously includes the skids and donuts and all the rest of it that goes on.
Sure.
Then after about a 2 year period there, I went in and I became a serious crash investigator. So I'm fully qualified to do that. And that was the other side of it. You talk to most people. I mean, I think the numbers are 1 in 4 people in Auckland touched by serious crash or fatal crash. So I did 2 years there. My grandfather was killed in a fatal crash. And now I've come back out and I've promoted to the rank of sergeant. And I am leading the team at Otahuhu. And for those that know Mount Wellington, and I heard Jono mention Green Lane, just backs right onto our patch and dovetails perfectly together, I guess, for some quote commercial industrial roads that people like to come and hang out in the middle of.
Yep.
Green Lane McDonald's right up the top of the list.
Well, we weren't doing anything dumb there. It was just the first point of we would meet.
I say you say dumb moves, but we understand, and I understand as, you know, obviously mostly normal. Well, they say I'm not that normally functioning, being in police, we're in the top 7, crazy, but people, that's the culture and that's the lifestyle and that's what people are into, and that's sort of the buzz. And you say this is what we were doing then, this is still what the guys are doing now.
Yeah, totally.
They might change from time to time when we show up before they do, but generally same stuff still going on.
So collectively, how many years in the force have you been, or how many years have you been?
Yeah, I'm up to 8 years now with the police. Okay. A whole business career before the police, and I tell anybody that asks what the police is like, I say I'd do this job for free if I didn't have to pay bills, because I love it. It's great. You're serving the community, you're trying to keep people safe, building trust and confidence. It just ticks a lot of boxes for me.
Fantastic. You mentioned that you're also a car enthusiast. What do you have a daily driver that you want to mention to us?
No, we won't go there anymore. my joke, it's not actually a joke, it's a true story, is my last my last modified car is actually on my wife's finger. Sold that to pay for the wedding and engagement ring.
Right.
So yeah, purely a what do they call it now, like a dad wagon, that kind of thing. Just say to me.
Sure. But
you can relate to that, Peter.
Yeah, I know. Vinny, I obviously I drive an SUV as well. I've got a little toddler, so I know how you feel.
So that's the best thing you can do, you know. Talking about car safety, put people in the most solid, robust vehicles that have the best safety rating going.
That's right. They
always come out better in crash stats.
But if it's not a daily driver, but you must have a dream car, right?
I like a lot of, like I like a range of different cars. But I guess my favorite is the first V8 I ever drove. We lived in Chicago for a few years. I'm born in Texas. My family's partially American, partially Kiwi. So when we went back, I got my full license in Chicago, and my friend was a couple days shy of his birthday, 16, when you basically go into the DMV and get your license.
Sure.
And he just about threw me into the driver's seat one night. He had a RS Anniversary Edition, about an 88, 89 Camaro. And that was real fun. And that was the first V8 I ever drove. That, so to this day, kind of the Camaro is the cool one. But I've had a lot of cool cars through the time. So
for our audience, they'll be like, what are we actually going to cover this time? And we wanted to dispel any myth or any misconceptions there might be, especially within the car community, with the police or the road police in New Zealand. And I came up with, we'll cover a few things here and there, about how people think about the police. Let's start a little bit easier. So you've been road policing for a couple of years now. What are the things that you quite see on the street, especially like car enthusiasts? What are the silly things that you see?
Yeah. Well, silly, as by definition, has a lot of different levels you can go to. I guess probably if I can give you a list of sort of common illegal mods or things that are sort of borderline that we're seeing a lot of in the street scene is where I could start. So I'll just ramble them off, and if you guys want to jump in, feel free. Stretch tires. Now, tires on dailies that somebody's purchased through a car yard, and you can kind of tell that with your 6th road policing sense that this person's just bought this vehicle. They have no idea what they've got. It might be lowered or not lowered, and they've got those stretch tires on there, because those you can see driving along behind any vehicle in traffic. The other one that normally goes hand in hand is some form of suspension mod or lowering. And the most common that we're seeing, which is not certified, is the adjustable suspension or the coilovers.
Yep.
Those are problematic for people, especially if I had a dollar for every time I heard, well, I don't know if it's legal because I just bought it like this, but it's got a cert under the bonnet. It's a fun game to play. I guess things too, so having an LVVTA, so the Low Volume Vehicle Technical Association, cert plates in the vehicles, and then having vehicles which are modified outside of the parameters of what they're allowed. Right. A good example, which is quite common, would be non-OE wheels for a lowered vehicle. Or somebody getting a car certified with 17-inch rims and then jacking them up to 18-inch rims because that's what we're normally riding on now. We've started to, with the turbo scene, see more of the external wastegates coming back in. Right. Of course, you're going to have a wastegate. It's going to be plumbed back into the exhaust system. Yeah, and then I guess another one that creeps up from time to time for people that do change out to race seats is correct seat mountings.
Interesting.
Yeah, and sort of. Those would be my top ones that we are seeing. And unfortunately for these people, are stickering off the roads on a every weekend basis. Because I think it's fair to say, if you're in the scene, you're gonna know. Or and sometimes it's the tale of two sort of things. People tend to talk a lot, and like you say, the myths and misconceptions come into it.
Yeah.
But there are a lot of backyard mechanics that have an idea to get you started down the right track.
Right. I'm glad that you didn't mention cutting of the springs. I hope that's kind of phasing out.
Here's a funny story for you. going back to the, you know, police arriving at all exits, about a month ago, we went down to the Drury BP after one of the night speed wars and basically did a compliance check of the vehicles that went through there, just being overrun by people in modified cars.
Sure.
The last car I found in the car park, I walked up and I was like, why is this person not getting in their car and hopping off down the road?
You know exactly why.
So I went down and I got down on my knees and I look up inside the wheel arches of this car because I'm like, this thing's pretty low. And the vehicle had no springs whatsoever. I haven't seen that in a real long time.
Yeah,
that's crazy.
I'm amazed that he still got it on the road and driven that thing to BP.
Exactly. Yeah. We had one other vehicle during that time, and it's the first time I'd seen it in a long time where somebody had actually cut their springs.
Yeah.
Unfortunately, the guy tried to bluff me out and tell me he was a mechanic, but I could clearly see he wasn't after I figured out what he'd done. hopefully not a functioning one. But he'd taken and cut the front springs, so it was lower. And you could see that the sharp edges and things were sticking out. That's very rare now. It's generally race springs or adjustables.
Right, because I think the cost when you buy just the springs and coilovers is relatively more affordable these days. I think people just put them on and don't even think about or try to dodge the certification rather than cut springs. Also, one other thing is, like, in terms of the decibels of the cars, there's another myth or a misconception. Are the police what are the measures of the police in terms of loud cars?
Yeah. So in terms of exhaust modification or changing your exhaust to having a loud exhaust, the rule that the police have to apply, because remember, we're standing out there in the middle of the day, night, whatever time of the day, whatever time it is. So the rule we apply is that the exhaust is not the exhaust is equal to or less than the noise that we know that car to be factory. So the example I use with guys when I'm training them on this stuff is, if you're taking your mum's Corolla and it makes a little fizzing noise as it goes down the road, for lack of a better descriptor, when you put your foot on the gas, and it drives away nice and sedately, and then you take your drain pipe hanging off the back and the thing sounds like it's got a V8 under the bonnet, then that does not meet the criteria.
Yep.
So for us, it's that subjective, as I call it, the trained earometer to say, hey, this car's too loud, or it's louder than factory. That's when we apply the green sticker. And then it goes back and we circle the right box on that form. It needs to be noise tested. then it's going to be up to the testing station to say this vehicle either needs, and this is a good misconception as well, there is a separate cert for the muffler or the exhaust system to your other certification plate, which resides under the bonnet of your car. So they're going to make that determination based on the correct test, where the police test in the evening is based on the noise that's output as you stand there.
Jeez, I didn't know that. So, okay, so there's another certification for aftermarket mufflers.
Yes, if it gets to the level where it's deemed it needs to have one, or you've done enough work on your engine where you've produced horsepower or power above that sort of 20% or whatever, so there's a range of reasons you would need to get it, then there is a separate one. You're required to have an A4 sheet with a written diagram with a holographic sticker on it that gives the certification number. That right. needs to stay with the car at all times, but you also must have the metal sticker, if I can call it that, that resides on the boiler or the back muffler. If you don't have those in combination and you've changed your exhaust system from what the drawing is on the diagram that the certifier puts out, then you're breaching, unfortunately.
So what if people swap their engines? So what if someone puts a, I don't know, V8 into a V6 just to, but the car itself looks quite factory?
Yeah, so in that case, then they need to look at getting that certified and they need to talk to the LVVTA guys. We would look at that. Sometimes we find, I don't know, like a 3.6, an old V6 Berliner engine vehicle, and somebody's dropped a V8 into it, and then you're just looking for that 20% power increase. But to be fair, it's impossible for somebody to stand there, unless they know their motors, to say, you know, by doing this or that to the internals, if it is an internal change, is going to change the power of that car significantly. Absolutely. That's a tricky one for us. Carbon monoxide risk to people. They take the catalytic converter out of play, or like you said, sure. before they remove it, that's what's cleaning that exhaust gas out of the system.
Aside from misconceptions, we want to educate first car and first time drivers. And then you always need to be a bit nervous. How should a young person, young teenager, drive safely and also buy their car safely as well?
So I guess the first thing you're talking about is licensing and driver training. I would suggest you get the lessons, any extra training you can do, and any of those sort of car control courses that are going are a great step in the right direction to being safe on the road. I guess one would be to keep your mates out of the car.
When you're in the learners, of course.
Yeah, for sure, yeah. for sure. Not just to meet
them. Oh, yeah.
Syria to be safe, but just, you know, distraction is one of our biggest issues on the road with crashes at the moment. So
right.
Keeping it all in check. I guess as well, when you talk about vehicles, it's working with mum and dad if they're involved in, like I said before, purchasing a vehicle, the one that's obviously within your means, that is the most modern and has the most safety features, something that's going to fare better in a crash. But yeah, I talk to a lot of people because there are, even amongst the folks out at the illegal drags in the weekend, there are quite a few people out now that are breaching their licenses because it's always obviously past 10 p.m. And I say, look, if you're going to look back on this one day, and for the fines, the demerits, and the things you're racking up, it's, I know it's a lot of fun for them maybe, but you're better to just do your time. It's a short period of your life where you've got to go through a process to become and do the time to be, I guess, quote, called a good driver and obtain your license. So just take your time and go through the steps as you should do. Stay away from high-powered vehicles.
Okay, so talking about cars or first-time cars, we've noticed in the last couple of years, we always look at the top stolen cars in New Zealand, and it's not always the Commodores, it's not always the Falcons, it's not always high-powered cars. It's always entry-level cars like Teeters and Mazda 3s. There's a lot very common on the road, but also great for first-time buyers. How would you recommend to keep our cars safe, and what is the kind of trend that you're seeing now with stolen cars?
Yeah, you're right. Those are cars that feature commonly. I guess the most common one we see, and I don't know why, but have a couple ideas, but those are theories, is the Mazda Demio.
We're talking about that podcast one, and we're trying to recommend that to first-time buyers.
Okay. Well, yeah. I agree from an economical motoring point of view. It's not a thirsty car. It just seems to be one that's chosen. It seems kind of old school now, but things like steering locks, not leaving your items in the car where people can see them is a big one. Getting yourself a real good alarm system and actually advertising that you have that on your car. When we talk about sort of, if I can use the term target hardening, any kind of car you buy, the more you can promote that this vehicle's protected, this vehicle's tracked, it's looked after, there's not things left in it that make it appealing to criminals, is 100% what you need to be doing.
Yeah, just to add, I do feel like, you know, if a thief really wants your car, that they'll probably get it, and sort of the best thing you can do is just to slow them down as much as you can. So like what you mentioned, like a simple steering lock, you know, it just adds the extra time that they'll, I don't know, you just want to make sure that they give up after a little bit, and then
They're after an easy target, a quick in and a quick out. And the harder you make that, the less appealing it is as a target as such.
Manual cars, automatic cars, mm-hmm. are they more attractive to thieves?
I guess there are a range of people we see stealing cars, but I'd say the automatics feature more. But then that's been the change in New Zealand driving patterns, the general drivers now. We don't, like when I first came back to New Zealand in 94, I had to learn how to drive a manual. I'm like, oh, this is craziness. Who does this? But that was what we had coming from driving purely automatic. But now you look at the percentage of the market that's is auto, it's quite high.
Let's talk about some of the car enthusiast perspective in terms of trends. So we touched a bit on at the beginning with my bowing cars and stretched tires, like you mentioned. So what other trends do you see popping up, especially in the car scene?
Probably colored lighting is a thing. People just understanding through the warrant of fitness process what they can do with vehicle lighting. We're talking about colored lighting, flashing lighting,
sure,
types of things there. They're around and about with different folks.
That's also a trend that's kind of dying as well. The neon lights or underglows.
It's making a
comeback. Okay.
Yeah, people.
It's simmering away with the invent of the LED light, my friend. You can put a light anywhere you like.
Actually, I have a question for you. Red car drivers, are they more attractive to you or not?
Definitely not.
All right.
But what's more attractive to me is offending drivers.
Sure.
speeding drivers, drivers on cell phones, you know, drivers not wearing their seatbelts. I personally don't tend to pick on any particular color of car. I know that was a thing, and I had red cars as a young guy, and people told me that all the time, said, buy a white car. But I think that stemmed from an old theory that rental companies buy white cars because they're easier to sell.
Radar detectors. Mm-hmm. What's the police stance on those?
They're not illegal.
Okay.
That's a bit of a myth. Some people think they are.
Yeah.
Certainly, frequency jammers are.
Right.
Not illegal. But yeah, I mean, boy, people spend a lot of money on radar detectors and they still get speeding.
Yeah, those Valentine V1s.
I do feel, I did have one back in the day, but I feel like these days the police can just, they don't even need to have the radar, their guns on, that they can just spot you, you know, and if you look like you're speeding, then they'll flick the radar on, and then by that point, you know, you're done. So, you know, it's still like, it's not going to save you, basically. It's not a 100% guarantee that you're not going to get busted, even if you have a radar detector, so.
Throw some numbers at you guys. Now, these are a little bit old, but we talk about speeding, and speeding is one of the leading contributors to more serious or fatal crashes.
Sure.
Spending a couple hundred bucks on your radar detector, or people like $1,000, something like that, from what I remember they used to be. So you can speed without getting caught. Why don't we just slow down a little bit? Like, they put figures of things like, it's $4 million cost to the country and whatnot, associated with a fatal crash, somebody that dies in a crash. $12 million, and it's probably more nowadays, if you survive a serious crash with life-threatening injuries or life-altering injuries. So with all those kind of numbers being thrown around, and, you know, cash is always king, as they say, but why don't you just slow down?
I definitely feel like, a lot of guys that they don't, I feel like a lot of them just, they don't really understand, or they don't think it's going to happen to them, you know. You know that, and that's the problem, right? Is they just think, oh, you know, they see the crashes happen. They see it happen all the time, but they just think, oh, you know, I'm a better driver than that, and I won't. That won't happen to me. You know, I'm a good driver, right?
Yeah.
But, it just takes one crash, or I definitely like one moment in my life was you know, when I saw my friend crash right in front of me. You know, he did a 180. It was in the wet, and he just spun around. He lost control, and he crashed into like a fence, took out a whole fence. And you know, that was a really like sobering moment for me, because you know, up till then I just thought, you know, oh, we'll be fine. You know, it's no problem. But it does happen, and it can happen. And I don't know. I guess it's hard to get that message across.
The thing you got to keep in mind is there's a range of factors that are outside of your control. The kind of car you drive, the way you drive it, the speed you drive it at, what you do while you're driving. Those are the things you control. What you can't control is what other people are doing either. It's something I tell people, I said, just slow down, because it might be the person that comes across you that you're traveling in a straight line that causes this thing. But what you're doing ultimately impacts at the other end of it in the outcome. Certainly the last week with my team and I, and obviously, police in the part of the world, we have Sylvia Park Mall quite close, and then there's a mixture of commercial buildings and things around there as well.
Right.
People's tempers are really short, and their attention spans are also equally short. You know, people are on their phones, people are speeding. That's all going to come to a crescendo soon, because obviously we're going to have Christmas in a couple of days. But those are the things. For the whole summer, we just need to pull it back, take a deep breath.
In regards to phones as well, I always thought it would be very difficult for police to notice when people are on their phones, especially texting and browsing. But I'm now thinking it's not, right? It's people's eyes are off the road, and you can quite tell they're looking down on their laps.
It's super easy.
Right.
yeah, I mean, I keep mulling it over in my head. We should do a funny video, but I mean, there's nothing funny about distraction and crashing, sure, of course, but just to get across the point, the police know what you're doing. We can see what you're up to.
Not as discreet as people think.
No. And it's always the person that's staring at their neighbor while their head's looking straight ahead. You can kind of,
oh yeah, yeah.
Or people at night that think you can't see the phone, but you can see their whole face lit up by the phone. You see some funny stuff, but that's what the distraction is part of. I mean, I absolutely typically drive an unmarked car. A lot of my friends out in the car enthusiast scene know my car. But I cruise along beside a guy and sat there staring at him in the lights while he was having a full-on conversation with his mate. One of my constables drove by me in a fully marked police vehicle, didn't even look twice, just kept talking.
Wow.
When I pulled him over, he said, "Why have you pulled me over?" I said, "Okay." It's the cell phone.
My question, if I got caught using my phone and I wasn't actually speaking or talking on my phone, would a lot of people would say, oh, I wasn't. What evidence do you guys have?
That's another good myth, definition of users is to hold. So using or operating your mobile phone, look at what our phones are capable of these days. Commonly get, oh, I was just playing with my GPS, or it's okay, I'm sitting in the line of traffic here, I'm not moving, it's okay to check my texts, just looking at my emails. That's not it. If the phone is not bolted to the vehicle and you're not having a conversation on hands-free, which is still not the best, but it's allowable, and you're touching, you're holding that phone, that breaches the law. You are allowed to touch your phone to make or hang up on calls. That's pretty much it. The ultimate things for me and for the police, I would say, would be obviously slow down, don't drink and drive, put your seatbelt on before you leave to get on your travels, and eliminate or to limit the distractionary sort of devices or things going on in the vehicle, and just make sure, you know, you keep on track with what you're doing.
Absolutely. And I really hope our listeners keep safe during the summer holidays. This is the last episode of season one, and we really want you guys for season two next year. Thank you so much, Sergeant Vinny. I think we covered a lot of key points and debunked some myths.
I hope so.
And thank you for sharing some interesting and funny stories as well. It's been more eye opening.
No problem.
Don't know any last words.
Yeah, just don't speed. Don't do anything dumb.
That's right.
Save it for the track.
Absolutely. And we did talk about the track in the previous episode. So if you do want to find out about getting yourself ready on the track, listen out for episode 6. But thank you so much for joining us, both Jono and Sergeant Finney. And thank you to our audience who have been listening through this podcast. Merry Christmas and a safe Happy New Year.
Merry Christmas.